Welcome to the Leadership Labs with DeepRec.ai, a podcast where we delve into the fascinating world of deep tech entrepreneurship, company founders, and venture capitalists. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this exciting journey. In each episode, we explore the minds behind groundbreaking technologies, the visionaries who dare to push the boundaries of innovation, and the investors who fuel the growth of tomorrow's game changers. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome. This week's guest is Georg Riefershey. Georg is the founder and MD at GNL Ventures. And in this episode, we'll talk about how he's a sparring partner, what that means. We'll talk about leadership psychology. And we'll talk about how to build a good work environment. Now, look, I totally understand that's a very big, easy statement, easier to say, harder to complete. But we'll talk about some of the studies and facts that actually back that up and go into it, into creating happy employees. But Georg, look, before we jump into it, I wanna find out a little bit more about you. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit more about you, your background, and what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, thank you very much, first of all, for having me and for the invite, Anthony. Looking forward to the exchange. Yeah, my background, first of all, I'm based in Germany right now at the wonderful River Rhine in Koblenz, 40 years of age. And my background is pretty diverse, I would say. If you go to the, let's say, pretty much education, I studied business administration with the specific of logistics. And also did a PhD, not completed, but still I did my research almost more than 12 years ago about pedagogy and psychology. So I'm pretty intercultural and interdisciplinary. And my main driver in business is like to build and develop teams, startups, products, people, obviously. I hope I can start with myself first. And this is so the business part I founded over the last 20 years. I founded 8 different companies, and I, as you said, a company, a lot of different founders and teams. I call it sparring partner. And on the other hand, I also work for more than 14 years in the background of higher education at different universities, leadership, process management, entrepreneurship, a lot of different topics, but mainly my main focus is always the big picture. Let's call it like this.
Nice. So yeah, talk to us then. So this is all this experience matched together has resulted in GNL Ventures. You mentioned sparring partner. You know, that's what you do. Yeah. What does that mean? If I'm working with GNL, what do I get? What's the service?
Hopefully, first of all, you get a good feeling, right? I know sometimes it's hard to talk about feelings in business, but feelings is kind of my currency, but not in the sense of this esoteric, spiritual, whatever perspective, but more like, let's say that your work and whatever you do feels good for you, right? You talked about working environment. And why do I use the word of sparring partner? So, as you know, right out there, there are a lot of people calling themselves coaches and consultants. And it's nice, right? Everyone can call themselves whatever they want. I used for myself the term of sparring partner, meaning I will be on your side and ask you the right questions. So this is pretty much my main tool. I don't want to.
Are your question punches?
Yeah, kind of. So I always say the quality of an answer depends on the quality of a question. So I don't focus like let's say consultants do, like giving all the right advices and answers and all this stuff, but more like trying to guide you through the questions to the right answer that you developed on yourself. Obviously based on all the experiences I made over the last years and my backgrounds and so the first question that I usually ask after like we get to know each other and if people approach me asking, hey, could we work together? It's usually literally that I say, okay, imagine how does it feel? How do you feel after, let's say, 6 months of working together? And then afterwards, if you know how it feels, how much is it worth? right? So I don't want to work with these typical day rates, or I don't know, I charge this much per hour, but more like I want to put already the focus on the value that we create. And so one example could be that you say, oh, I feel much more clear about what I want to do as a leader, as a founder. I'm much more clear about my values. And this creates hopefully a feeling of, I don't know, being more self-aware, being more self-efficient. And yeah, this is why I work with questions instead of answers.
Nice. Good way to do it. Good way to unlock. Unlock the brain, right? You get asked tough questions, as you said, there's good questions lead to good answers. You get asked tough questions, you really have to think about it. But if it's something that's so dedicated towards your business, sometimes you still have to really think hard about it. And you're like, damn, I really should know this, right? That's the light bulb moment you're probably hitting for.
Yeah, so, I mean, from the area of quality management, I guess you know, right, there's this method, it's called five times why. Yeah, ask five times why, so to get in this sense to the root of a problem or something that is not perfect, let's say, in a process. And this, I mean, obviously it doesn't matter if you ask five time or seven time or 10 time. I always say ask that often why until people don't have an answer anymore, because then they are pretty much on the root of maybe the real cause. And just to give you a very easy example, let's say if you ask, I mean, if you go in a group, in a room of founders and ask them, okay, who of you wants to be successful, right? I would say everyone raises their hand. The question is, what does successful mean for you? 20 different perspectives, right? Then you say, okay, let's say, for example, one says, I want to earn a lot of money, and say why? Yeah, to buy a lot of nice stuff. Yeah, why? Yeah, because I like it. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and go on. And then you can, if you really want to do it, you can learn a lot about what drives you, what motivates you, what are your values, what is important to you. And this at the end of the day is the root, the basis for everything out there, for all the processes.
I've heard of this, and I think the person, when I was very first told about this technique, was like, imagine like a 4 or 5 year old child.
Yeah.
They just keep asking you why, right?
And yeah.
They're not doing it, but like they're actually really quizzing you. But
yeah,
they're obviously not going to ask you about goals and say why, right? It's different, but quite funny that. To get to a better understanding of what we're actually, what our underlying motivations is, you have to revert to how you communicate when you were five.
yeah. And that's a very good point, actually, because I usually refer to the aspect that when we have, I mean, all of us have been kids, obviously, at one stage, and we have all this curiosity and creativity also in us, right? But then we kind of get educated or socialized with don't ask too many questions, or maybe don't ask stupid questions. This is bullshit. You know, this is the reason why we have this kind of society. The older you get, the less very often people ask questions, because they think, oh, it's a stupid question. But I always say there's no stupid question. There's just a stupid answer. Right. And it's a perfect example. So, for example, I have two kids. The oldest is already 17. The youngest is 7. And I think 1 year ago, we drove to I had like a talk about leadership, and we were driving in the car, and he was asking me, hey, where do you go? What do you do? And I said, yeah, I have a talk with people about leadership. And he said, he asked me, why are you a leader? Right? What does leadership mean? And it's this pureness of these questions, that help you to find really easy, hopefully easy answers. And yeah, that's an interesting game. Let's call it like this. Yeah.
That's really cool. Really love the way that's put together. So I wanted to move on and talk to you about, you know, the leadership psychology that you follow. As you mentioned, you know, leadership, 20 years, business background. We are in a tech world, right? I'm based in the tech world 99% of the time. We're all tech people. None of us are, well, some of us are, but most of us are not coming from that business background, so we look at things from a very different perspective. What does leadership psychology look like for you? What has it been like along that journey as you've got better of it over the last 20 years?
Yeah, so one thing that I always say is, I mean, the fact that I had my first employee 21 years ago. I'm doing like leadership courses and everything in universities for more than 14 years. This doesn't make me a good leader, right? But what it does is I always know in every single situation when I'm not a good leader. And I can say this with like self-confidence, that because this is way more important. Focus on the moments where you're not a good leader instead of always striving for this like hacks of being always perfect and I don't know what, because I mean the list of things that people say leaders need and what kind of roles they have, it's almost unlimited, right? And it creates a lot of pressure for especially young leaders. And no matter if you call it digital triple 4.0, I don't know, super leadership, or if you call it, I don't know what kind of leadership style, the basis of leadership is pretty much there's a human being in front of you.
Yeah.
As easy as it might sound, and it's not important if this person is like in the first row, if it's like an, I don't know, a tech guy, if it's like a sales guy or whatever kind of guy or nationality, even though there are obviously differences. But first of all, there's a human being in front of you, right? And human beings have needs, have motives, have values, and some of them are pretty similar, right? I know that we always sometimes think that, we have 8 billion, I guess, I don't know how many exactly people of the world in the world, that we have, I don't know how many billion or million of different characteristics. I don't think so, right? There's a lot of basic in, let's say, how people, I always say like function, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is what we need to understand. And also one part is, even though it sounds so easy always, never ever think that if you're in a room with people, and it's the same like with us now, we are just two, right? But that we have the same reality. And if we don't have the same reality because we have different perspectives, interpretations, different words, you name it, I don't think that you have the same reality as I'm. So I'm not making my reality to your reality, right? This is very important. And so I would never be surprised if after 1 week you tell me, hey, last time you meant like this and you said like this. And I say, okay, yeah, this is your interpretation, but I meant it different. So maybe let's try to communicate better. I don't know, right? So this whole aspect, I always use the word of reality and reality check as a tool. Let's do some reality check together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess this is where it comes in. So you're talking one to one, me and you. Easy to say that, right? We've come in, we've clear communications on what this is going to be, right? We know exactly what we're here for. Some cases, right, you manage a team. You manage a team of 8, 9, 10 people. Even more so difficult if you manage them in the modern world and they're not even all coming onto video calls. Some of them are working remotely. Some of them are in different time zones, right? This whole element of communication goes wrong. But if we try and link that back to leadership, like, is there, I know there's no silver bullet, right? There's no one size fits all. But what do you think, like, how or what would be a good approach that might actually be good for the masses? Now, again, we're not saying it's perfect. I want that to be clear, because there is no one size fits all.
Yeah, and that's a very important part that you're just saying, one size fits all. Or like I always say, there's no like blueprint or master plan, or in German we say Mal nach Zahlen, right? First of all, so what I always say is like, if you become a leader, and I know a lot of these things sounds easy, right? Sounds like a calendar quote or whatever I always say. Yeah, it's not about that if it's difficult to understand or not. It's about the awareness in every single situation. That's what it's about, right? It's not difficult to understand that there's a human being in front of you. The question is, are you always aware in these moments? Are you able to zoom out in the bigger picture and see what is going on right now with you as a leader and your employee, for example, right? So this is like this ability to zoom out on the meta level, because leadership is very often on the meta level, or at least you should have the ability. This is very important. And leadership starts with self-leadership, right? I mean, again, easy sentence. What does it mean? It means pretty much, if you're not able to lead yourself, don't start leading other people, right?
So I have a question for this, and I find this becomes really hard, right? I've managed, as I mentioned to you, I've managed teams up to 25 before. I've most recently been managing smaller teams, but the tasks have been a lot tougher, so a lot harder to manage. I've found the best way for me to actually understand what's going, let's call it your house, the best thing to understand what's going on in your house is you actually have to dedicate time not to have a meeting, not to be doing work, almost like a pen and paper. You write down the person, yeah, and you start saying, this is what I think is their reality, this is what's going on. And then when, yeah, you're doing your regular meetings, you want to bring that in and say, hey, look, Johnny, I know this is what it is. This is what it looks like for me. How's X, Y, Z? Because if, yeah, you don't do that, whatever happens 2 or 3 weeks ago, someone starts saying, oh, my father passed away, you know, right? Yeah. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, you just forget about it. You don't ever bring it up. You don't ever ask them how they are. They feel devalued. Communication, yeah, trust is all going down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good example. And it's people business, right? It's about, that's what I said, like, you work with human beings, right? And so what you also mentioned is like, it's kind of the example of having this reality check, right? A lot of times I see leaders, especially if you come out of an operational level in a company and you grow, and then you, like, I don't know, then you become a team leader, obviously your tasks change, right? And then, mm-hmm, and then people say, oh, this whole part of, I mean, I have more responsibility, but I don't like this whole people stuff, you know, right? I mean, like, listening all the time, caring about their problems. And the point is, I mean, I feel that sometimes because it can be overwhelming, but the point is, this is your daily work as a leader, right? A lot of times I see that okay, this is more like the, people think it's the annoying part sometimes of leadership, and it's just a side effect, but this is your, at least from my understanding, the main part. So make sure that people, I mean, I know it sounds too much, but let's be a little bit provocative sometimes, but make sure that people like to go to work. Not it's not your only sole responsibility, but make sure that this is on the agenda, that this is on the awareness, and that this is important to you because this is part of your leadership values. And then people will feel it, not just because you say it, because they feel it, and then they will way easy more follow you, right? So this, yeah, is what we call as authority, like people following you voluntarily because they trust you, because they know. Also, very often I have this question of, yeah, trust your employees, and I don't know to trust them, but if they mistrust, whatever. And I always say, like, I mean, if you want to get trust from your employees, go first and count in that maybe sometimes your trust will be missed. Yeah, so that's part of the game, right?
So very good lead on to what I wanted to ask next. I wanted to talk about performance management. I'm not talking about like performance improvement. I'm talking about how do we get what we expect. So we hire someone, we hire them based off a job spec. They come in, they know what the role is. If your communication is good, they'll know even from day one what their expectations are, week by week, month by month. I know performance management links a lot back to communication, but how do we effectively get what we're expecting out of people? Again, not, yes, when they're happy, they work harder. We know this. When they feel rewarded and sat, and like when they feel respected and work, this all works. But if those things don't exist, mm-hmm, where do we start?
If people don't know, or let's put it the other way, I mean, performance is pretty much is the result out of people's behavior, right?
Yeah.
And And people's behavior, by the way, is also like not doing anything is also behavior, right? So, and as you said, there are like a lot of things implied, like values, motives, stuff. And I mean, that's pretty much the key. But so what, even though, I mean, in companies, we create these lists of expectations or descriptions of jobs and stuff. These are just usually words, right? And as easy or not easy as it sounds, always like clarify what you really mean. You know, create this reality check. If you say a customer satisfaction, what does it mean? What does it mean for you, right? What's your understanding of customer satisfaction? If this is the one of the goals of your customer service employee, if you say this and that, and I mean it. We have quantitative criteria in performance, but we also have qualitative, right? Try to have a mix between those two. It's not everything. You can't calculate everything in a performance. And but I would say that what, also based on the experience, but also based on a lot of studies and science out there, is what people need is to understand the big picture, the why, right? How does your task fit into the big picture? What's the difference if you do your task or not, right? Because a lot of times, especially in this remote scenarios, we have people doing stuff and then they start asking, hey, what the fuck? I mean, who cares about my job? I don't know, maybe, right? Yeah? I don't get feedback from my boss. He doesn't ask after 2 weeks about my results. So maybe my job is not important. And to show them, how does your single task, the wheel of your single task, how does it fit into the overall wheels of the company, so to say? And fun fact is, I don't know if this is like, this is the real English word, like the wheel, the Zahnrad, we say in German, you know, like technically speaking, these wheels that interconnect with each other.
Yeah.
When I work with teams in process management, right, we want to understand the processes, the flows in a company. I always start with like very easy pictures. I give them pictures, like pieces of paper with wheels, interconnected wheels painted on it. And then they write down their process and the process before and afterwards to get this kind of picture and understanding. Oh, how are these things interconnected? Why does my colleague need this and this document? What does he do with this document? Why does my boss always wants me to convert my Excel into a PDF and whatever, you know? And then people have these aha moments. They understand, oh, this is why you needed it. Oh, this is why it's so important. I always thought like no one cares about my job. Yeah.
I think with that becomes a level of becoming more mature in your work. And that's like, it's really hard for someone who comes in, graduate engineering for 6 months, because they don't really understand the business yet, right? And it will take them some time to understand how writing code results in money in the bank for the business. It is a big difference between that, what you learn in university, and what actually happens in the industry. What I wanted to ask there, so look, you've mentioned the why, and it was good, because I was actually just going to ask, how important is the why? So we're talking weekly, monthly communication. You know, you're given your tasks, your goals. This is what we want you to perform on. And then you've got the why. If we're trying to say over a 4-week period, we want to set an effective communication chart. Again, no blueprint. Should we be talking about the why more? Should we be talking about the goals more? Is it a case that we talk about goals on Monday morning, why on Friday? Or should it be flipped? Like, is there, again, I know there's no result, but do you want people to know what to do Monday to Friday on Friday and then be told on Monday morning, remember, guys, this is the fight we're fighting. Here's our why on Monday morning.
Let's put it like this. I mean, obviously, as we say, there's no blueprint and characteristics are different. I mean, not, as I mentioned, this huge variety. But this is also why I work with a lot of psychological diagnostic surveys and stuff, like, for example, insights to understand people a little bit more. And obviously, I mean, you can't reach everyone with the same communication because they all have same different interpretations and reality stuff, right? Let's say if you want to put this in kind of an order, is I always start with the level of awareness. People always ask with the why, how to. How can I do it? How do I do this? How do I do it? This is always this how. But the point is, start with the why, then the how to will work. If you just start with the how to, you go out and just, I don't know, like do this, like you do it because someone told you, or you do it because all these successful entrepreneurs are doing it, you know, waking up at 5 a.m., all this bullshit out there. I mean, find your own solution, right? If it's good for you, do it. If not, whatever, do it differently. But coming back to the why to, okay? So clarify the why to before the how to. The awareness should be in leadership that if you want people to get on track, whatever you want them to do, if they do it or not is always connected to the understanding of the why to. If they don't got the why to, this is in the basis the reason why they don't do their job. So if you go in front of people, the task is always to get them on board, to have this awareness. Just always assume that this is your main challenge, your main task, right? They want to understand why, and if you show them that this is your understanding, you will focus on this. So instead of just saying, hey, let's do a social media, online social media marketing sprint for the next 7 days, and this is how we're going to do it. We do research with the benchmark, like our competition, and then you will do 5 reels a day in TikTok, and you will do this, and how you do it, here's your camera, and here's your script, and let's do this. Yeah, nice. The point is, why the fuck should we do it? What's the reason behind? I mean, why? And then you say, yeah, because we need more customers. And then good employees can also train themselves and ask, okay, why? Why do we need more? Why do we this? Why do we do? Why do we do?
Five whys?
Yeah, at least. Right? And then the point is, very often people tend to answer to a why question rationally, you know, like logically. Yeah. So this is why in German, I use the German word of wozu instead of warum. I mean, it doesn't make sense now in English, but because wozu goes deeper, you know what I mean, from my understanding. The why is not a rational, logical why. Sometimes we have logical aspects in it, but it's more like if people get the big picture, if they understand how their task fits into the overall picture, what's the contribution of the task, they will most probably follow. And what is now important to say is, even though it might sound easy from my part now, like talking, I don't want to sound it too easy. I don't want to say, okay, this is all and then it's easy. This is all of this, what I'm just saying, is very challenging. It's very challenging because you will always realize people don't have the same reality. People will, and this is part of the game. Just never, never, ever expect that everyone gets the same message, that everyone gets your why. Yeah, this is also part of the game. If you're in front of 10 people, you have 10 different realities. 5 might get the why, 5 don't. You can't convince them, but this is, I mean, every day you have new chances, right? It's like a game. See it as a game. You know, like if you played Mario at the N64 many years ago, you know, this like points that coming up on their heads, like if you play these games, this is how you could see it. Like your employees are like these people, and then you can see the points coming out of their heads with regard to how they understood the why.
What about processes? So we've got the why, we've got, you know, communication. Me personally, I like to try and over communicate, but then have a process that is very simple to understand, so that if you come with me with a goal, you can get there 80% of the way without needing me, right? Leaves 20% to innovation, I would like to think. That's what I would say, but I would like to, I could be a lot better at having better, clearer, defined processes for every individual task. There's also quite a reason that I haven't, is because I believe, again, some of it can be open to innovation. What's your thoughts on processes? Have you ever had any in place to help teams succeed? And I mean, I'm talking as very simple as every morning we meet for 10 minutes by the coffee machine. We we talk through our days. You know, these little simple things become habit, become ritual, become process.
Yeah, yeah, that's a perfect what you just said. I mean, that all these words that you just mentioned, right? Processes are the basis for habits and rituals and stuff. So I used to work a lot with processes, like also like technically speaking now with flowcharts and all these things. And when I always say like why to before how to, I also use it with all the tools that I use. So meaning the how to of processes, you know, like creating flowcharts and all these things. Yeah, okay, that's one thing. Sorry?
It's not the fun stuff creating the charts.
Yeah, it depends, obviously. But let's say this why to before how to, you have to do with everything. So what's the why to of process management? It's not just to create flowcharts that no one cares about, what you do in quality management, you know. It's about showing people that it's important that everyone has the same picture, like transparency, that we have a structure, that we have pictures in our heads. Because why? Because people have... can deal way more with pictures instead of just like written words and stuff. Yeah. Seeing interconnections between colleagues and teams. This is what process management for me is important about. Right. So my approach to process management is also called values-based process management. So VBPM. I have regularly also workshops on these topics. And processes is very, very important. And still at the same time, there's the same requirement. Make sure, for example, why is it important for you to meet 10 minutes every Monday morning, right? Why is it important that we have this kind of process? Yeah, but let's say in general, zooming out now and talking about process itself, it's about structure, right? People, we need structure. We need kind of structure, not like, and then find the right balance between saying, okay, your full day is like planned from beginning to end and everything is put into processes, or if you have obviously a good balance in between, right? And it depends obviously on the jobs. Yeah. But I like to have these conversations about processes. Just to give you one example, I used to discuss this whole process of process management with also social workers, right? Social workers, and then they kind of told me like, okay, process management doesn't make that much sense because we work with human beings, and human beings, you can't predefine how they react. And I said, yeah, sure. It's not about standardization, because a lot of people think it's about standardization. But I said, like, it's about the process of sitting together and thinking about processes, right? The journey is the goal. And if you sit down with your colleagues and you talk about, for example, if you work with suicidal people, right? Obviously, you don't need like a flowchart how to deal with them and then, you know, like get out your flowchart in this dangerous situation and talk to these people. But when you talk together about how to approach suicidal people, what kind of options do you have? You have this moment of finding new ways, understanding how your colleague is doing it, have three different options, prioritize these options. How can you deal with them? What's the probability of the reaction of the other person, you know? And this is what how I understand then process management, sit together and talk about how to do it, right?
You mentioned something there around process, around having habits and all these things that are important, right? Weirdly enough, I find a short meeting in the morning generally just adds structure to the day. You know, talk about what happened yesterday. If someone had some good news, you can say, yeah, great, well yeah. done. That's it, right? But what's... I didn't read the full study, but I semi-found out about this study. You might know a little bit more about it. It was related back at COVID, and it was about how people who were still working when COVID first hit, fully working from home, how they were unhappy, unproductive, mm-hmm. and unfulfilled. And basically, it was everyone used to be in the office 5 days a week, well, me anyway, but then everyone becomes 5 days at home overnight, yeah. and it just changed. So people's structure to their day, or like their mindset was preparing for work on their commute. You have a work brain, you have a home brain. So you couldn't effectively switch your brain into work mode, and then just as much as the clock hits 5:30 or 6 PM, you couldn't switch it off.
Yeah.
So you're just uncomfortably not sure of what you're doing because of the lack of structure. So some companies were able to react and make certain changes quickly to try and help make this happen, right? Some individuals were, right? Opted to go to the gym before they closed down too. Then it became very hard. But I just thought the whole thing was rather interesting that it was structure. And it was only after then, when I really looked back, when I used to have every morning quick 10-minute meeting with my teams, and then after lunch a quick 10-minute meeting with my teams, it was only then that I realized what I was actually doing without doing it on purpose, right? I was creating that moment, that mental shift, that as soon as that meeting's over, that's it. There's no going to the coffee machine. There's no making cereal. That's all done before this meeting. And it just worked really well.
Yeah, so I don't, I mean, there have been several studies about this whole topic when you talked about like COVID and the change. I would say like the main challenge, obviously, when people started working at home, I mean, and I'm this is my daily life, right? I'm always like pretty much mostly remote. Whenever I founded a company, my job was, my idea was always to make myself unimportant as a leader and to be not in the operations. So I know how it is. And to be honest, because this whole interview shouldn't sound like, okay, I'm perfect and I do everything. I'm not good at structuring my own daily life, to be honest, my own business life, right? I very often jump from topic to topic to topic, but at least I know about it. I'm aware, and I know a lot of these different reasons also of that. And yeah, let's come back now. I would say what structure, the why of structure is to define priorities, to define what is really important, to balance your time, right? So coming back to your example, so why should we meet every morning 10 minutes? Because you implicitly, imply that you say, hey, because it's important to hear your, I don't know, to bring us together, to listen to each other. So you know what I mean? There is always this why behind these structure things.
There's also an element that most people's partners or friendship group don't do the same job. So they ultimately don't understand what they do or why they've had a good day or why they've had a bad day, right? And who understands the people that sit in the same room as you for work?
And I mean, the funny thing is I started this actually with my girlfriend also to not because we are like unromantic and we have to plan stuff, but we put like a date night on a regular basis in the calendar. We tried this, you know, like a date night every whatever kind of weeks in the evening. Why? Just because we are realistic. You know, everyone has their schedule. Everyone, life is busy. Life is fast. And we just wanted to highlight that it's important to us. So this is what I would say. Like, and for example, if you start your day at home without any kind of structure, meaning you start your day without any kind of priorities, everything is as important or everything is as not important. You know what I mean?
Probably like, the latter.
doing laundry is as important as, I don't know, doing research in and this is the, and again, I talk from my heart. I'm also not good in this, but it's not about saying that you're always good in stuff. It's about, first of all, understanding. It's about level of awareness before you start into level of action. And, but if we look at this differently and also this whole calendar stuff, right? Putting things in calendar or not. If we understand it as setting priorities, right? To really think about what is important. Actually, just 3 days ago, I did this with my co-founder of one of my startups. We sat down and we said, okay, let's really think about what are your tasks, what are my tasks, not technically, but from the priorities. Yeah. How much time do we actually have a week? Then we said like, okay, a quote, like an average ratio. And then it's like, okay, so many hours, meaning we could dedicate to this topic. Really? Okay. Is it that important? Yes, it is. Okay. We had some discussions about it. And now we're just trying to put these slots into our calendar realistically speaking, we know that we will always have new stuff coming in, new distractions, new appointments. But as the, in the moment that we're doing it, we are doing it with this awareness that it's a good idea. It's not like a master plan, but it shows us our priorities. And from now on, we prioritize this topic, and then we can still see what are the challenges and how it will it really be done.
It's directionally accurate, but that's about it. We want this done by X time. There's no, you've got A and C, B fills itself in eventually over time.
Sometimes
that's all you need. You set yourself a deadline with a task. I mean, when I say set yourself a deadline, if you, I know it's quite weird, if you want to speak at a conference, put yourself forward, get selected for the conference, and then, my God, you have to have something ready to speak to in that time.
Yeah.
But if you set these deadlines, and particularly if you make yourself accountable with someone else, as you mentioned, making yourself accountable with one of your co-founders, you have to do it. I think that's really helpful. So most things that I try to do, I have someone that will, I'll try and almost partner with a wit so that I could be accountable for it. Even if they've got nothing to do with it, right?
Yeah,
I've got friends who I'm like, look, I'm gonna do this. Can you ask me how I'm doing next week?
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, I know a lot of these quotes sounds like, but the point is, we all have 24 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This whole, you will never ever hear me. And again, if you look at my portfolio, I have several companies, several projects. You could think about, okay, this guy is like, how, because I'm realistic with my expectation management, what I can achieve and setting priorities. But you will never ever hear me say, I don't have time, because we all have 24 hours. That's fucking stupid. We have time. It's just not important to you right now, maybe. And I know I totally feel this part of deadline. And I know that a lot of you ask very often technically, you know, what are the tools and stuff. What I want to highlight all the time, I don't want to say that this is not important. I just want to say, the more you are clear about the why of something, for example, if you say, I want to be on a conference and speak. If you are 100% clear, whatever 100% means, right? But if you're clear about your why, you don't need a deadline, right? There are things in life where we don't need a deadline, where we just in the flow, where we just do stuff, where maybe even people have to say, hey, let's go slower. It's because we are 100% clear why we want this and why it's important to us. And if we miss deadlines all the time, if we postpone stuff all the time, just understand that we always say, maybe not aware, but we say it, that this is not important to us.
Yeah.
So postponing stuff and not doing stuff on a regular basis in your company, it's only a question of priority. And again, this is, by the way, a very important part in my daily communication with employees, when they always tell me it's, oh, we don't have time, blah, blah, blah. I always say that's, no, don't talk to me about we don't have time. It's about setting priorities. And it's my task maybe to hopefully show them what the priorities are. Yeah, we have certain stuff in business operations that everyone is 100% clear that this is always happening. And why? Because we have this priority of this.
There's a really good book on priorities, really small book as well. Eat That Frog. I'm sure you've heard of it. Yeah. For anyone that hasn't heard of it or read it, it's a really small book, really easy read, really interesting. Talks about eat that frog, the frog being the biggest challenge of the day. Eat the hardest challenge first. If it takes you 2 hours, so no matter what, you've come out of that day accomplishing one of the highest priority tasks. If you try and start at 5 o'clock and you say, oh, I don't have time now, it's tomorrow. So eat that frog, people.
yeah. And again, it's with everything. Yeah, stop saying I don't have time. So for example, also these typical topics that we all have, right? Going to the gym. I don't know. Never say I don't have time. Just if you start, because this is a lie to ourselves. If you say, okay, if we decide not to go to the gym, let's be honest to ourselves and say, okay, I don't go to the gym because it's not important to me right now.
Yeah.
And this hits different.
Well, you can, there's elements of it where you can make it work, right? You either go to bed earlier, wake up earlier, go in the morning. You can flexi time, go at lunch if you can find a gym nearby, right?
Yeah.
There is ways that
yeah.
you have 24 hours. You can't gain more time, but you can actually make time in a way, right?
If it's important to you.
No one's going to the gym at 10 p.m., but if you want to watch a Netflix documentary at 10 p.m. and wake up at 8 a.m., that's up to you. But if you want to go to sleep at 10 p.m. and wake up at 6 a.m. to go to the gym, that's also on you.
You know, and it's so good that we come to this at this late stage now of this interview, I guess. So because if we now zoom out completely, right, this is pretty much what this whole story is, what I always, my main word in life, what drives me is self-efficacy, right? So does life happen to you or are we in charge, right? And everything that we have, or that's maybe one idea and everyone can think about them on themselves, everything that we have in our lives is pretty much based on decisions, right? Everything that is even though if we do it aware or not aware or whatever, unconscious, it's like, it's a decision. Not going to the gym, going to the gym, having a girlfriend, not having a girlfriend, I don't know, all these things. It's kind of, if we want to think about this in a self-efficient way, I don't know if this is the right word, but understand that it's a decision. And decision is based on priorities. So you get what you prioritize, kind of.
I've heard some interesting phrases about that. I can't remember. It was on another podcast I was listening to, a sports one. They say the hardest weight in the gym is the front door. And the hardest part about going for a run is putting on your shoes.
Yeah.
As soon as you've done those two things,
yeah,
you're going to finish the task, right? So it's just one way to look at it. Before we move on to the end, I did want to ask you one thing in particular about the Gallup study that you mm-hmm. mentioned, because you're passionate about building good working environments. You were able to tell me about the Gallup study. I mean, look, I'm working in HR and recruitment for 9 years. I know all the statistics behind it, not necessarily the study. So yeah, love to hear about that.
Yeah, so the Gallup study is done, to be honest, I don't even know like how many years, but I guess like more than 20 years for the last 20 years. And it's from the Gallup Institute. I think it's based in America, actually. And the study behind, or like the survey, is called Q12 because you have 12 different questions about the topic is employee engagement. So what does it mean? It's pretty much the difference, or like not the difference, the combination of, I don't know, being committed, being motivated, identify. And I always try to use sometimes pragmatic words. It's pretty much about the question, how do you feel about your work when you wake up in the morning, kind of, right?
Is this the study that is, you'll have like 50% of people who are happy, 30% who are passive, and like 20% who are actively looking to leave? Is this one?
It's so the statistics, and this is the very, very a transparent study. It's all about all sizes, all nations all over the world, branches, industries and stuff. So the results are pretty similar over the last, I don't know, 20 years, and even countries and branches and industries. We have more than 80% of people that are not engaged or actively disengaged. Actively disengaged.
It is this one. Yeah, yeah. I know the results.
Yeah.
I know above 50%, or having people 50% in that engaged zone is considered good.
15. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, and I always zoom out, and if we talk, because every single workshop, talk, whatever, I usually start with this. I even have it on my business cards, right? This 80% of people do stuff they don't do like on a daily basis. And now let's be realistic, right? It's not about purple unicorns and everyone is a startup founder and CEO. That's not the reality, right? We will never be able to reduce this number that much, to be honest, in reality, right? And there are jobs maybe that suck, and I don't know, whatever the point is, and people don't know what they want, and I don't know, and a lot of bad leadership out there. The point is at least being aware of it. And for me personally, this is also a lot in my leadership language with people, to make them aware, this is lifetime.
Yeah.
This is lifetime. We have just one life. Let's think about what we want to do with our lifetime. This is how far I zoom out in my leadership style, right? And to make them aware, and maybe even I had people, they realized, okay, this is not their job, and then they left and they said, okay, that's fine. And this was good for me because we learned it together. I helped you to find your what is better for you, and that we learned together that it's not the right fit for you, right? And for me, this, I mean, we have a lot of problems and challenges in the world, right? But let's say if we look at this, a certain area in the world, and say people that mostly, let's say, have a roof over their head and food and stuff. This is a severe and traumatic result from my point of view, because this means that more than 80% are sitting together every day doing stuff they don't like, going home to their wives and kids and I don't know, friends and whatever, or not, or maybe they are single. And creating this kind of atmosphere and scenario, and teaching the next generation, okay, I mean, yeah, that's what life is about. Job sucks, but you have to do it, right? All these beliefs in your head. I mean, so think about lifetime, think about priority, think about decision-making, think about self-efficacy. And this is what is really, I don't blame, I don't finger point, I just say, hey, let's all think about what the fuck are we doing with our lifetime, right? And don't tell me that it's not important whom you spend 40 hours with. I know people have different motives, and not everyone wants to self-develop and whatever and create a company. That's fine. Not everyone has to do it. But don't tell me that you don't want to think about what you do in your fucking lifetime, right?
I mean, how many people, I deal with this all the time. People, of all the people I speak with in my entire career, 9 years doing recruitment, less than 5% say they leave because of money.
Yeah.
Nobody says I'm leaving this job because I'm not being paid enough.
Yeah.
There's always structure, leadership, management. There's maybe they're not getting that self-actualization from this,
yeah,
this role. It's not giving them what they want.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we need is people, right? It's going to change again. And I mean, for everyone here, we're now going to be coming into an age where we're going to be starting soon to manage millennials, and again, different mindsets, right? It's changing every 20 years. And I can really see it, you know. They've grown up using different social media platforms, grown up with different social medias. Even yeah, that alone is just creating how people view and see the world. People that always see the people that they went to school with always on holidays. These are always in the Bahamas. They're always in, I don't know, Jamaica. They've got such a cool life. I now hate my job. I'm going to let this impact me when I go to work every day. So there are these challenges that, look, they're never going to be anyone's fault, right? You've never introduced them to this environment, but it's up to you to make this happen. And as I said, if you do a house check, right, you can really look to understand this person. Maybe what's more important to this person is having a meal with their mother. You know, they like to do that. They like to do that once a month. If they do a great job, hey, reward them. Tell them, where do you go for a meal? Here's a voucher. Yeah. You take your man for lunch, or you take your man for dinner this time. It's on me, right? And that is the stuff that you really need to understand. That really drives, you know, the respect that they have for you as a person, as a leader, and for your business in the future.
Definitely, yeah. And the hard part about it, because I mean, I'm doing this for so many years in all these workshops and other stuff, it's like talking about values and motives is so often so difficult for people, because they think, it's intangible, you know, it's like all these pity, petty, putty, whatever. It's the basis for everything we do. The fact that we both of us are sitting here in this, because it's lifetime, right? It's 100% related to values. and motives. Everything we do, and yeah.
I can almost, like, I reverse engineer my goals up to 5 years away into monthly targets, into weekly targets, right? I know that's extreme. But for me, that helps me stay motivated. That helps me understand, hey, what's been a good week? You know? So I can leave at the end of the week being like, oh, that was tough. I was like, what have I achieved? You know? Mm-hmm. People say they hate KPIs. They hate micromanagement. I micromanage myself. It allows me to perform well in my life. And I've realized I'm happy when I'm performing. And that's where that comes from for me.
Yeah, see, and this is what I was just saying. I mean, it fits for you. So don't just assume that it fits for someone else. But if you zoom out, this is the technique, right? You call it micromanaging because of the tools and stuff and whatever. If it's micromanaging or not, that doesn't matter, right? It's the question is, it's a tool, but this tool is also based on certain values and why it's important. And fun fact, before I started this interview, I was talking with one of my business partners, by the way, which is also my brother in one of my companies, about a KPI for a new restaurant that we just opened. You know, and the point is, most of the time of this meeting, I talked about the why of this KPI. Why do we do this? What's maybe, so to get him on board. And so I could go on for hours about this, you know, all the time. I mean, it's not about what kind of KPIs we come up with and how do we calculate, I don't know where they come from, how many tools, there are millions of tools out there. But if people don't get the why of KPIs, doesn't matter what kind of tool they use.
I mean, look, for me, very simple. You can relate anything back to being happy, good service, anything, right? You can make a why about a KPI in a restaurant, right? We want everyone within 5 minutes of being seated to have a drink in front of them. Why is that important? Because they're coming here to spend their money. We want them to leave happy. Because how many times have you not been happy or had a poor experience in a restaurant? And how many times have you remembered it or has that impacted your night negatively or positively when you have a good meal experience, right?
Yeah. And that's the point. If you, I mean, just to have this example, if you run a restaurant and think about this, don't have a meeting saying, okay, today, let's 90% of our meeting time, we invest in finding the right KPIs. No, make them clear. Tell them about your vision, about what, how guests should feel, blah, 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 blah. And then afterwards, they will come up with their own KPIs because they get your vision. They understand the why of this restaurant.
There's even little things. Like, I've worked in restaurants since I was 14. So I worked in restaurants like 6 years before I moved into sales. But even things, I understand, like, the reason why you even say goodbye to people, the reason why you say hello before you even see them. Reception areas. Like, these, if we talk about experience, and look, you can relate all this back to how you treat your employees. It can be how you say hello to them, how you host your meetings, how you start your meetings. It's all still very relevant, right? But the importance of all these things to create an experience or an environment that's desirable to be in.
Yeah. And this is the loop of the starting of the first question is, it's about the feelings, right? I mean, everything in our life and also everything in business life is pretty much people doing stuff with people, you know, people working with people to sell products and services to people. It's always about people. I know that a lot of people out there think, nah, it's about whatever and social media, automation, KI, bullshit. At the end of the day, it's about people, people making decisions. People buy stuff, right? People buy services or don't buy services. And so this is why everything is people business, not just this consultancy industry or whatever. And let's put it like this. The more you focus on the why, the less you need the hows. Because, you know, if you are, there are thousands of examples of restaurants that are run perfectly and they never probably thought about any KPIs because they live it.
Yeah.
And this is the idea. Instead of focusing, you know, that's the same if you, I don't know, go to 10,000 different 10 different fitness studios Google, listen to so many different fitness influencers, look for different training plans, nutrition plans, all this bullshit. But you don't know why it's maybe important to have like a healthy lifestyle. And if you don't get it, if you don't clarify your why, all the personal trainers won't help you with their house.
Yeah, I think it's something that I really want to put a focus on this quite soon, is the importance of good health in leadership. Yeah. The importance of being healthy and fit in the startup world, right? It's not talked about. Obviously, we know the benefits, mental health, energy, clarity of mind. Also, it's very busy people, right? It's easy to bury your head in the laptop for, I hate to say it, more than 12 hours a day. I mean, I'm a victim of it myself. I know the reason. Sometimes I've not left the house for 2.5 days. I don't feel good when I don't do it, when I do that.
Yeah. Again, it's always about the awareness of zooming out, looking bird's eye perspective, not being surprised. So I know very often this doesn't sound like people always want this advice, but it starts always with the level of awareness and understand yourself, and then you can understand other people better and enjoy the ride at the end of the day, right? What I always tell young leaders. I mean, I don't say if I said be able to lead yourself before you start leading other people, I wouldn't like put this out there in like a written book in a sense of that this is a rule, but just for your level of awareness. I obviously started at a very young age, and obviously at a very young age, I wasn't able to lead myself. You know, I can talk all about this because I made the experiences myself. You know, I had a lot of hard times in my life, and I was struggling with my leadership, obviously, because I couldn't separate it. And yeah. I brought my bullshit into the company and made my bullshit the bullshit of my people. That's actually what I also use as a language when people, employees come to me and I always say, don't shit on my table. don't make your problems my problems. I know that sounds hard and maybe now totally misleading after this long time of people already. But I'm meaning this in a sense of, understand that we are all human beings. We all have our topics, and I want to understand how you feel and what your challenges are, but don't make your reality my reality. You know, yeah. I mean this in a positive way. I know it sounds hard, but no, I mean it in a positive way.
It's important, right? And I mean, look, we're at an age now where you can break up with your girlfriend, you could be going through divorce, you might be having problems with your family, your friends, your football team, right? It's good to have these problems. It's good to have them acknowledged. But to come in and, I would say, to be like an energy zapper of the environment or the whole team, when there's one person in 10, that one person, if you think of it like, I hate to say it because it's bad, right? A disease, they can infect those other 10 people with their bad energy.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want. I mean, there's an element of keep it professional, which I totally respect that. I think it's important, and this is where, as I said, house check. This is where this stuff is important. If you start finding out these things, you're like, hey, look, let's grab a coffee. I want to talk to you. How are you? And then you start being that person that they can trust. When everything else is going to shit, you be the person that speaks to them. You be the person that's there to listen to them.
That's a very good example. And so I had a lot of employees that, and I mean, now I have to be very careful that we don't have this as a snippet out of a podcast where people have no attention, but that trusted me in a sense of that they could cry in front of me because of all their personal stories, and, you know, because they opened up. This is actually one, maybe even proof of my leadership part of that people trusted me with their fears and whatever, and this is important. And at the same time, because I want to create this atmosphere where we can be open to each other, but at the same time I say, don't think that your problem is more important than the other problem of your colleague, because he doesn't talk about it all the time. He doesn't suffer publicly. This is what I meant. Maybe this makes it a little bit clearer. Open, let people open up, find the right balance of saying, okay, I hear you, and still balance it and say, okay, we all are human beings. And also, by the way, which very often people don't get, you know, leaders are also human beings, you know what I mean? I also have my challenges. And this is what I talk about. sometimes people expect that everyone in leadership positions always like, I don't know what, we are all just also human beings. You know what I mean?
I mean, personally for me, there's very few people I talk about my deepest challenges with, my deepest fears, right? A lot of them are my best friends. It's very relieving to actually have that relationship, to be able to talk about these people. I would say my boss, I've got a very good relationship with him, and I would put him into this category where we've developed that relationship. Because look, he's a good guy. He can support me. He can tell me. And ultimately, yeah. if I'm not at the races and my head's not in the game, it's important he knows. And we're now at a level where I've been on the receiving end, where I will actually come to him and say, hey, look, just so you know, this is what's kind of going on this week. I'll do my best to keep it out of my work, but this is happening, right? I'm highly stressed.
yeah.
But Georg, I wanted to jump into the quick fire questions. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
Right. Start off quite simple. A book, podcast, or content that you'd recommend to other listeners?
So I guess a lot of different inputs that I had all my life. So one book that I highly recommend, and it's a very old book, it's from Viktor Frankl. It's about man's search of meaning. It's one of the highest sold books out there. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search of Meaning. And podcasts, to be honest, mostly I don't listen to that many business or leadership podcasts anymore. I usually listen to podcasts that are quite just entertaining, where I can just turn my head off. But to be honest, like six years ago, I was a lot into this whole like personal development mindset stuff, and I listened to a lot of these things. Today I see stuff a little bit more different, but I'd say everyone or a lot of people maybe know this book of Tim Ferriss, this collection of Tools of Titans, you know, where he interviewed, he comprised all the results of interviews. It's a good inspiration to see a lot of different things, but I always say like, don't focus too much on the tools, but more on the why to of tools, but still it's a good source of, I would say, impulses.
Nice. A little bit more of a tougher one now. What would you say has been your biggest success with helping leaders?
The biggest success, first of all, like that I have been able to create like next level leaders that also like took over maybe even my process, my responsibilities, because I always say like I want to make myself unimportant as a leader. And my own biggest success actually is, and this related to also, let's say, money success, but it was like that I worked in an industry where people usually don't have a big tendency to like their job because it's kind of tough and hard. It's about in the medicine area. And we created the working environment that people like to go to working in. They told me I didn't like my job for the last 8 years in different other companies, but now I'm here and now I like it. So this was a very big success in leadership, actually.
Nice. Last one for you, Georg. What are your three non-negotiables when it comes to leadership?
The person in front of you is a human being. Go first, start with yourself. Leadership is about self-leadership. And I think that pretty much that maybe that even it's so big that it kind of gets already the three. And yeah, oh no, point number three is never expect people to have the same reality in a room.
Nice. Absolutely love that, Georg. It's been an absolute pleasure having you as a guest, and
likewise
for time. That concludes another enlightening episode of the Leadership Labs podcast. If you found today's episode thought-provoking and informative, be sure to subscribe to the Leadership Labs on your preferred podcast platform or on YouTube. Thank you once again for joining us on this journey through the Leadership Labs. Until next time.